23-year-old Jack Garner from Scunthorpe lost his sight at the age of 11. Recently, he became the first blind British person to successfully reach Mount Elbrus summit in Russia. Now, he spent 8 days on the mountain in extreme conditions, and he joins us now to tell us about it. Hi, Jack.
Hiya.
Tell us, first of all, how did you actually get into mountain climbing then?
So I got into mountaineering through my university. I was studying at the University of Birmingham, and in my first year, I joined the Raising and Giving Society, and as a charity fundraising event, I climbed Kilimanjaro. And yeah, I absolutely loved that trip, and from there I was hooked, and I did Everest Base Camp the following year, and then this year I was just looking for something similar. Something similar to do to progress with it.
Now, for people even with full sight, it sounds like quite an extreme thing to achieve. What drives you into it? What is it you enjoy about it?
I just love the whole experience of it, really, from planning the trip to the people you meet, get to know and meet there, to day-to-day life on the mountain. Then the actual the ultimate challenge where day-to-day just walking one foot in front of another brings people together to try and reach the summit. So it's just quite a raw challenge, I guess.
Yeah, do you like pushing yourself then a bit?
I've done a lot of sport over the years, and love having something to aim, always having something to aim for, and to push myself, and like walking into altitude or into quite extreme environments, it's quite really enjoy going into new territory.
Mount Elbrus is 18,500 feet. That is a fair old climb. What was it like? Because you had two guides with you, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a Russian guide who was the guy for the. We had a group. We went there as a group of five, so we had a Russian guide for the group, and then our British guide. I walked with him 1-to-1.
And I would think that trust is a big thing that you have to learn, don't you, when you're relying on guides as well.
Yeah, definitely takes a while to get into the swing of things and to trust them, especially on the descent or on parts where we're using crampons because it was snow and ice underfoot, and it takes a lot of trust when because it's slippy. You can't really afford to basically place the wrong foot, so I mean you have to just be very aware to follow instructions word for word. And
you mentioned crampons there, which are what you put on the base of your boots, don't you, to try and bite into the ice?
Yeah, yeah.
And you had an ice axe as well. It's quite a technique using that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, crampons and ice axe, and I've never used them before. So we spent an afternoon before we got too high, where we had plenty of practice with them, and then with the ice axe, Paul taught me how to perform an ice axe arrest. So. Yeah, hopefully I wouldn't have had to use it, but it's just a manoeuvre to anchor yourself into the ice in case you do slip.
I myself got caught on an ice field many years ago, Jack, and I didn't have an ice axe and I didn't have crampons. And I tell you what, it was terrifying. I actually I froze in the middle of this ice field because I couldn't move one way or the other, and eventually I lost my footing and I went. But thankfully, for some reason, I managed to miss all the major boulders going down, and I survived it. But having the ice axe there would, like you say, you can arrest your descent with that and try and sort of slow yourself up a bit.
Yeah, even just practicing. We did a controlled slide, and even then on the ice, you over the space of a few meters, you soon gather up a fair bit of speed. So it's quite nerve-wracking even just practicing with it. So couldn't imagine having to use it in the real thing.
What were the big challenges then when you're actually on the summit? Because it sounds as if it was really extreme up there.
Yeah, because I think the main season is June to September, and we went at the end of September. By the time we summited, it was October, and so it was mainly just it was quite bad weather. We were the final camp. We were there for a couple of days, just waiting out for a weather window. And because it wasn't looking very promising, then we finally got a window in the weather on the day before we were due to fly home. So we went for it, and yeah, it's like very windy. I think they recorded 85-kilometer winds. The coldest point throughout the trip was minus 37 degrees. Yeah, so setting off when you go for a summit attempt yourself in the middle of the night to give yourself enough time to get up and get back down. So the first few hours were extremely cold. I mean, it's a long day with the increase in altitude. It's like the lack of sleep on top of the fatigue, the altitude, and the extreme weather. Yeah, all adds up, and so it's pretty exhausting.
Was the air quite thin up there as well then?
Yeah, you start to notice it above. I think anything above 3,000 meters, you start to notice it. But as you got higher, it's just doing everyday tasks. So we were just walking very slowly, just at a slow walking pace. You feel your heart racing, and you're like very breathless. So it just makes everything a little bit harder.
I know when I've ever been about mountains and that, I always suddenly feel how small I am and how insignificant I am, because nature is so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, you can feel that, especially with Elvis, when obviously being on surrounded by like snow, it absorbs the sound. So yeah, being blind, you can just get complete silence. So yeah, it's quite amazing to realise how, like, when you're surrounded by the elements, and when it takes 8 days to get to the top, it makes you realise how big it is.
And it's tempting just to slide back down, isn't it?
yeah, definitely.
How long did it take to get back down then?
So we got back down in the one day. Going up, it takes a while because you're being careful not to gain. Well, you're obviously slower going up, and you have to be careful not to gain too much altitude to acclimatise. And like some of the acclimatisation days, we walk up and walk the same distance back down, just to get to that bit of altitude. So then when we come back the next day, hopefully we don't have many signs of altitude sickness. Whereas coming down, you can just come down as fast as you can, basically.
What kind of reaction do you get from other people when they find out that you've done this, and you've done this without sight?
I think generally people are quite surprised, because like you say, I think they imagine it's quite a challenge for anyone with sight. So and then I think besides being surprised, usually the next question is what I tell them about how cold it was. Usually they wonder why.
And what do you say to them?
Yeah, just tell them how much I enjoy it and what I get out of it.
What have you got planned for the future then? Because I'm assuming once you've done this and you love it, then you're bitten by it then, aren't you?
Yeah, I definitely want to get something planned for next year. So I'm going to look into what's like a good mountain to follow, I guess, given my experience so far. Yeah, I'd like to progress with it and see how far I can take it in terms of going higher and doing another mountain to develop my technical ability.
And do you think this is quite good for raising awareness about sight loss as well?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just shows a good light on someone doing something just for the enjoyment and something you don't typically expect someone to do.
And you doing that could inspire somebody to do something else completely different, but it's just the fact that you've attempted it. What I'd love, Jack, is if you can let us know when you're planning your next, and come on and have a chat, and we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll let you know.
Jack Garner, thank you very much for chatting with us.
Oh, thank you.